Oh, yeah, big news for Cougs. Oh, nice. Yeah. Here we go with the Tom and Curly Show. Teeny Tiny's coming in. Sean, if you mind, you open the door for Teeny. We let her in here. But the house, of course, is... Oh, look at that. The horses. One's wearing cougar colors, Tom. The other one, UW.
Nice. Are they sniping at each other?
No. They're all, no. You know, collegial fun. Oh, and look at this. By the way, rumors are this guy's going to run again.
I have this beautiful head of hair. I need a lot of water.
Your hair.
And you go into the shower, right?
Right.
You turn on the water. Drip. Drip. Drip.
Have you thought of a perm?
Oh, no, I mean, you're there. That is Teeny Tiny's go-to. She's always mentioning the perm. I think she does perms. It's the only way to explain that. All right. So your head coach, Nick Rolovich.
Rolovich.
From Hawaii. Coming here, and the kids seem to like him. The kids being the kids and the Cougars, the people that played with him in Hawaii described him as zany. He, one of the fun stories that he took his phone and he taped it to his helmet, his bicycle helmet. He drove around Pullman to show a recruit what it was like to possibly live in Pullman. Had him on FaceTime. He hired an Elvis Presley impersonator, brought a tarot card reader and a Britney Spears impersonator for different events and Western Conference stuff. He was just a guy, did it differently. And even when COVID hit and the government locked everything down, he would go into restaurants and buy 20 dinners and give it out to a whole bunch of people. So he was certainly cut from a different cloth from traditional college football coaches. And when they asked him to get vaccinated, he said no. He asked for a personal exemption. Is that what it was, Tom?
Yes. So finally, well, what was interesting about him, he was very mysterious. We didn't hear anything about this until they had the coaches day, the Pac-12 introduced all their coaches. It's like a media day for all the football coaches. And he didn't go because Pac-12 has rules that you have to be vaccinated or protected from COVID-19. And he says he couldn't show up. He would have to do it by Zoom because he was unvaccinated. And he wouldn't. He said, that's all I'm going to say about it. So none of us knew why he was unvaccinated. If there was something going on, he says, I want to keep my reasons private. Mm-hmm. Then recently, about a week ago, his Hawaii coach, June Jones, let it slip, according to Rolovich, not fairly or wisely, that he had applied for a religious exemption. So that's the last we heard. He said, yes, that's the case after they beat Oregon State. Mm-hmm. And he was just waiting to see what was going to happen. So nobody really knew his motivations or what was going to happen. To me, this is something of a shock. I'm a huge Husky fan, and the Cougars are our rivals, but I always root for Washington State as well. I'm not a Cougar hater. But word came out today. Seattle Times had an article before there was a
Saturday
decision.
He talked about it on Saturday.
Okay, let's go with that.
How do you expect the process to play out?
I'm going to come to work tomorrow. I'm going to get ready for BYU. I'm going to grade this film. I don't think this is in my hands. So I've been settled for a long time on it. And I believe it's going to work out the right way.
And the right way, you mean, is to remain the head coach?
Correct.
If
that's not what he wants, then, you know, I guess then I gotta move on. But I like being here. I like being the coach here. I love these kids, and I just got faith in it.
I think the dean of the school, the president of the school, said it didn't fit, didn't seem to make sense. The rest of us are off doing this other thing, and he's not going to get vaccinated. So. Fire with cause, off he goes. $3.5 million is what he was making. He beat Stanford on Saturday, and I guess he'll pack his stuff up and they'll start looking for a new head coach.
Yeah, the highest paid, state position. I mean, he got paid more than anybody, more than the University of Washington coach, more than the governor, more than anybody, and he's walking away from that. So there's only thing to add, because we thought there's a chance that he might get fired today because his exemption request hadn't been acted upon because it came in so late, perhaps. We thought there might be a delay. We don't have any of the details, so we don't know if his exemption was delayed, if it was rejected, if it hadn't been acted upon. They could have decided, the university can decide to fire him, whether the exemption, I think, was you know, was addressed or not, ultimately. But it does, there's one paragraph in the Seattle Times article that, this was news to me. That says, Rolovich follows a number of individuals and groups on social media that contradict widely accepted scientific views on COVID-19 and the vaccine. Some of them coach vaccine opponents in how to apply for religious and medical exemptions and promote alternative COVID treatments, such as the antiparasitic ivermectin. So yeah. It might be that this was like a political stance, and then he was using the religious exemption, or the religious exemption issue was deemed, you know, in too late or insufficient. I don't know if there's a chance for him to get rehired, but the athletic director, who I think was the one who had to pull the, you know, pull the trigger on this firing, the university president says it does get in the way of messaging because everybody else was on board in the in Pac-12 circles and in, at the university, or at Washington State University. But I still am, I'm somewhat shocked.
I think he's, I think the UW guy gets paid more, Dom.
No, I don't think so. I swear
I
I've read that 5.5
million.
Highest paid. Okay, we'll have to check. I swear that I keep reading.
No, you're right. Jimmy Lake set to make 1.6.
Yeah.
It's less than 1.6 less than his predecessor. So his salary now, assistant coaching and pool drop from 5.94, whatever. So, okay. Listen, 3.5 million bucks to do what you love to do and to have a winning record. But again, you have to get a vaccine. And if you don't get a vaccine, out you go. So he's playing by his own rules on that one and deciding not to get one. Of course, we had heard from Fauci for months, years, that when this whole thing started, that super spreaders were always going to be the case. And then you'd see, you'd watch the news, and then they would talk about how selfish and inconsistent and how dangerous and how reckless and almost like they deserve to have blood on their hands if you let these college students go back and then you let them go to a 90,000 or 100,000 kids in a stadium screaming and yelling, that it's going to be worst case scenario, that it's just going to be death and destruction everywhere. Just chalk that up for one more thing Fauci was wrong about.
This morning, college football fans are getting ready once again to pack stadiums nationwide. 4 weeks, crowds in the tens of thousands, mostly unmasked, have sat side by side, now cheering on their teams at the halfway point of the season.
They're bringing more energy than before.
People are more pumped up.
Yes, sir.
All while doctors warned of game coming potential super spread events.
That's right.
A frightening prospect, with hospitals at the time already on the brink.
As soon as I saw it, I thought COVID's about to have a feast. What did you think?
I thought the same thing. I think it's really unfortunate.
But it never happened.
Wrong!
COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths now all down nationwide.
Do those scenes of those packed crowds give you less anxiety than they did back in September?
It does. It definitely gives me less anxiety at that time as I see some increased number of vaccinated people and the decrease in the dwindling numbers, for sure.
Cases are now in steep decline in every college football state across the South, including Florida, where hospitalizations fell 64% last month, even as some 90,000 fans packed the Gator Stadium.
You see it on TV and it looks really scary because we're not used to seeing that anymore. But in reality, I think the exposure isn't as great as we think it is.
Doctors crediting games in open-air venues, a vaccination bump during the surge, and natural immunity after Delta swept through younger populations. Dr. Cindy Prinz is an epidemiologist at the University of Florida who's been studying infection control at outdoor events.
We prefer to learn by studying, but I'd say in this case, we probably learned a little bit by doing as well. So it's not a matter of trying to keep people from doing activities. It really is a matter of trying to figure out, you know, can these be done safely?
A timely concern as large-scale events increasingly move indoors.
Uh-oh, there's the question. You bring them indoors. You don't have the circulation with the outside, right? With the air that we kept hearing. You had to wear a mask if you're outside. That was what they said at first, and they were following the science, and then apparently the science changed. You didn't need the mask. So all those super spreader scary things turned out to be not super spreaders. Super Bowl, not a super spreader. Lollapalooza, not. The football game, not. Sturgis, not. 28,000 plus the number of people. There was almost a million people in Florida at the time going to various Super Bowl events. And it wasn't a super spreader. So every time you hear super spreader, just think super spreader manure, because that's basically what happens when that's just to scare the crap out of you. So that
there were
you
a lot of
don't
super
go
spreading
out.
Events.
Name one.
I mean, the thing is, I don't know that early on.
That's what I thought.
Well, I know they don't have names. The Super Bowl, you point out the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was the most people in a stadium, and they were like 25,000 spread around a stadium that seated, 75,000 or something. So it's like. They were precautions, but wait a minute. Just to clarify, I thought you had to wear a mask now when you go to like the Seahawks games. That's not the case.
That's the rule. So what people do is if you're drinking, if you have some food, do is they get a beer and you have a beer in your hand and you put the whole thing is an all 100% show. The mask stands for masquerade because it is just a giant show. It is a show.
It is
an absolute nonsense show. And there's no enforcement on it. There's just some guy walking around with a yellow jacket on. Hey, you need to push your mask on. Oh, yeah, I got a beer in my hand. Oh, all right then, okay.
Well,
just a joke.
John,
it's a joke. The whole thing is a joke. I'm so glad people are not following the joke. It is a joke.
So I
went 6 feet, 3 feet,
this
10
weekend,
feet. Pull your mask up.
I went to the Seattle Art Museum to see the Monet exhibit, and I went to the Seattle Opera, and everybody is carded. I mean, you have to prove your vaccination status, you have to show your ID, and you have to wear a mask indoors, and everybody did. So there are people that are playing by the rules, and there's
the average
food
age?
Is not allowed.
What was the average age going in to see the symphony?
Oh, I mean, I would guess at least 50s, maybe more.
Probably, yeah. And those people want to wear them, probably wear them all the time. I saw some lady in the supermarket. She's an old lady. Yeah. She's probably wearing them because she got the vaccine. Yeah. They told her to. She got the two, probably got sick as well. And now she's going to get picked off by the new virus because the vaccine is not as effective as it's been told. Or if you're older, it doesn't last as long. So we're following these things along. So even though you went ahead and got the vaccine, put the mask on anyway, and you could still die. Something is going to kill you.
But
if you're young
and you're in college,
and you're in college, it's not going to get you. If you're a little kid and you're in class, it's not going to get you. But
that's
again,
why all those Black Lives Matter protests, nobody, they weren't super spreader events either. Everyone thought, oh my God, a lot of them wore masks, but because they were outside, they figured that maybe that is why the super spreader events.
So then why did they say that people are going down and protesting at the Capitol? Why were they wrong? And the people that were marching around Black Lives Matter, why were they vilified?
Wrong about the results
why were they
the
vilified? No, why were they vilified?
The election was not.
Not what they're yelling about. They were vilified for being selfish and not having masks on and wanting to hurt and kill people.
On January 6th.
No. The people that marched in Olympia, Tom, the people that were in Olympia protesting the mask, protesting the fact that you could go fishing, you could go in a boat, but you couldn't go fishing. You could go play golf, but you had to play golf with your brother-in-law. I mean, all the ridiculous stuff. They went down to Olympia, and then they were being vilified by the governor as being selfish and inconsistent and possibly wanting to kill people or killing people. But then just the next day, you had a bunch of people marching around, smashing windows and lighting things on fire. And those people, according to the CDC and the 1,500 scientists that signed a letter saying, yes, COVID is a real serious concern, but racism is even more of a concern. As soon as the CDC came out with thought, I will have absolutely no faith in anything that part of the government does. The CDC.
Well, that backfires on you then, John, because 99%
why do you trust,
of the stuff
why would
the
you
CDC,
trust the CDC?
You would
why
agree
would you,
with.
Why would you trust the CDC?
The CDC at the time, now it is true because Trump and his people in charge there did not do a very good job of dealing with it, but the CDC was considered the gold standard around the world for scientific exploration. Idea, yes, CDC was seen as the gold standard. However, Scott Gottlieb, who was Trump's FDA guy for a while, has written a whole book about this, how the CDC is not equipped to go into the field. You know, like their job really is to do research, and they're not used to suddenly having to come up with policies, and the government was sort of out of practice, out of step, and he's called for a kind of reimagining the role of government. We need to have an activist wing of like the CDC that actually figures out a way to apply things. That's what's going on there.
I saw
the CDC in general. John, yeah. You'd agree with 99% of the stuff. It's only the CDC.
The CDC was like, hey, try to eat more vegetables, cut down on sugar, and you know, only have one beer a month or whatever. I mean, that's the CDC. Just a bunch of bureaucrats spooling out a bunch of health advice.
They're medical scientists.
Tom. Why the CDC was not prepared for this? The CDC had become this giant bureaucratic.
They weren't designed to do this.
Yeah. What they were supposed to do, which is if something like this were to hit, they would have some sort of plan in place. They didn't have a plan in place, and then they falsified information regarding kids and vaccines and kids and COVID. They put stuff out to get people. They do the noble lies. They flip-flop back and forth. You get a call from the teachers union, the CDC and the teachers union write the letter together. I mean, I don't know why anybody has any faith in this government. Any part of the government, whether it's Trump Biden.
John, the problem is that I would think that you would support and agree with like 90-95% of what government says. It's just the 5% that you object to, and it's only this on this COVID thing. And I think Scott Gottlieb has explained it well, that we don't have a situation designed. CDC are a bunch of research scientists. They're not policy types. So to then try to apply policy to a bunch of slow-moving, because it's better, scientists, is a mistake. And we need to kind of rethink things. I don't know if it was the Department of Defense or something. He was suggesting that we have one other, you know, factor dealing with the two. Let the research scientists do the research, and the people that are projected to get the vaccine out, for instance, or find the vaccine or do testing, That's what we're not.
Gottlieb warned them. Gottlieb warned them in 2014. Said, "Hey, listen, you dodged a bullet on this other virus that came along and the Ebola thing. You better get this organization to do what it's supposed to do, which is react to pandemics." They didn't have anything in place. Yeah. They had nothing set up for it, but they still spent billions and billions of dollars every single year to send out things telling people to cut down on the amount of sugar they eat and try to drain the fat out of their bacon. I mean, come on. Why anybody? I got to ask you, why do you have any faith in the government?
Because so much of what we know about how the world works is government based. Government helped create the internet. Government created all these medicines. They work with the private industry to come up with ways to solve the problems around the world, not just the United States, but around the world. And there's so much positive knowledge that we as the government can create.
How are we doing on that, looking into where the virus came from? How's that coming?
Well, it's coming slowly, but, you know, it'll
I read it. It was a page and a half. It's a page and a half. It came out about a month ago. Tracy Taylor's got to look at traffic. Alrighty, Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Bucky's Auto Service Centers with 16 locations and being around for 50 years, you're doing something right. That's right, you're fixing cars the right way at Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Thank you, Bucky's. Men and women there, dedicated to fixing your car. Okay, I heard from Lace, she told me, did you see the beginning of the game? Did you see before the game started that Russell Wilson was out on the field just sort of without a ball, imagining? Did you see him out there, Tom?
Yeah. Apparently it was, he did everything he would normally do to play a game, including going through all the plays. And, you know, he writes, he comes up with like 10 pages of questions about the upcoming opponent that he gives out. He did all that stuff. The only thing he didn't do was put on pads and literally play, but he was doing
Chris
was
Collinsworth. Like, Chris Collinsworth goes, you know, you're in the backyard as a kid. I mean, you know, you're just still going through the motions. And, you know, there he is out there. He had no ball, but he's acting like he was throwing the thing and running around. It's I guess for him, he has never missed a game. Yeah. So he's just
ever.
It's like, Russ, you're not playing. Russ, you're not playing. He's just like an old horse. A boxer, the doorbell rings, and the retired boxer jumps up out of his chair and punches somebody. So in this case, Russell Wilson running around, we could have used him certainly. But I got to tell you, I didn't see the first half. So when I just tuned it in at the second half, I'm like, wow, look at the Seahawks. They're doing great, but everybody kept going, this is an entirely different team than what we saw just 20 minutes ago.
That first half was as bad a half of Seahawks football that I can remember. I mean, it was god awful. We didn't even come close to scoring. We were down 14 a zip, and all the talk in the world at halftime, you'd think, couldn't solve the problem we were facing, and instead we did. And I heard this morning on Mike Salk, Pete Carroll was on talking about the game. He says at halftime he was like really. He said he used the word pissed, and Mike Salk said, "Well, you usually don't use that word. Why were you so?" He says, "We just have to, you know, get it together." It basically was kind of like a "Let's do this," and they just ran it right down their throat. It was unbelievable. It was the most impressive run oriented, not much pass drive. We did two of them. I remember thinking on our third drive, I said, "Oh my God, we've got these guys. We're gonna win going away." And then just like with the Husky game, just when it looked like you tied it up at 17-17, that's when we couldn't quite get over the hump.
But Alex, it was Collins' second half.
Here's right back to the line of scrimmage. A handoff to Collins. This time he's down into the goal line. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Touchdown. Alex Collins, this drive has your name all over it. And the first thing Geno Smith does is goes back and congratulates all the offensive linemen because they just blew people off the ball on that entire drive from 2 yards out. The Seahawks run their way right back into this thing.
Wouldn't you have given anything to be in that locker room? I mean, you know, when people talk about how important the coach is, to have the horrible beginning first half, I don't know what he says in that locker room, but that team, that was the classic football game, which is run, play option, pass, wide open. Yep. Yeah. Run, pass, right? This is just old school football that you were seeing in the second half of the game. And it was just, I was like, oh, here we go. Come back, and then probably get close enough. It'll end up, you know, being 17-20 or something like that, and we end up winning. But how did it end up in overtime, Tom?
Well, the key play really.
Is this where Geno Smith?
Yeah. Well, okay. If you want to know, it's in order to throw it in overtime. There's this unbelievable, the game the clock had run out. It was 0.00 and all this. And we ended up having 1 or 2 seconds left on the clock, and we kicked a field goal to tie it up.
Hang on.
Here's the spot. The kick is away. That kick is good. We are going to overtime in Pittsburgh, tied at 20 apiece.
Now, let me ask you this. If Russell Wilson, I give you $100.
Yeah.
If Russell Wilson was in the game, we went into overtime, and what we have just seen transpire in the second half, in the third quarter, in the fourth quarter, you would say $100, absolutely guarantee you know you're going to win that $100 back, right?
I would be willing to bet $100 on Russell Wilson. I don't think there's an absolute 100% guarantee of anything in football because somebody could have dropped the ball or had it punched out. But, yes, I do think, unfortunately for Geno, because he played a pretty darn good game, unfortunately for Geno, I think that if Russell had been in the same situation that Geno was in, that we probably would have gotten into field goal range. One thing I want to say, that this is what turned the game, if you can count to one play. We got the ball on a fumble at the 35-yard line, and all we had to do was kick a field goal.
Yeah.
If we hadn't gotten an offensive holding penalty against us and put us back 10 yards, I think that would have, you know, we could have won the game. We had to make up 20 yards and then we couldn't. And so we didn't end up moving the ball. That's unfortunate. But again, one play, there's so many plays. You can't just blame one play, but that would seem like a bad, bad call on the referee's parts.
And then for everybody to relive this moment.
The play fake. Geno looks, pump fakes. Now he's going to scramble. He fumbles the football. It's picked up by Bush, and Bush is dropped at his own 17-yard line. Geno Smith, his first scramble of the night forward for positive yards, and has the ball knocked out of his hands. I think it might have been, I'm sorry to say, T.J. Watt, who got there again for yet another big play. If we never see T.J. Watt again, it'll be too soon.
Yeah, he spent more time in the backfield than Chris Carson. I would say that
he's on IR.
I saw something interesting happen. Did you see the call? I guess, unsportsmanlike conduct or personal foul. This new thing now where they're punching the ball.
Oh, yeah, that was crazy. That worked in our favor, so I was all for the call. But, yeah, basically, yeah, and I might have been T.J. Watt. Some big mammoth guy is just punching down into a pileup, punching, you know, like it was a prize fight.
Yeah.
And they call the penalty against him, and they said, if he's just trying to hit the ball, the problem is it's so easy not to hit the ball, and then it looks like you're just punching a player like two or three times.
Right.
So they call the penalty against him. Yeah, personal
and right,
foul.
Where the official might stand, to him it might seem like you're throwing a punch. But you're right, Tom. He's tall enough, and there's the pile, and he's up above it and punching straight down. I guess he's like driving like a hammer-like throw down into trying to get the ball to pop out because the knee hasn't gone down. There's still forward progress. They haven't blown the ball dead yet. And I guess this is a move that more and more people are doing just to try to get the guy to release it while still in the standing position. So
ironically, it would be interesting to find out who that guy was, because it might have been the guy, you know, T.J. Watt, who tackled and recovered the fumble on Geno at the end of the game.
I think
he's
number 90-something.
Anyway,
there you go.
Some big Pittsburgh guy.
Now, Monday, don't forget Monday night, we're going to be sending folks to the Saints game, so you get a chance to watch Seahawks and the Saints.
Saints
Jaguars. There'll be a Jaguars the following week. Then,
yeah, they're even worse.
And then Green Bay.
Hey, we're hoping we get two wins, and at least then we have a bye. So we have two wins. We'll be balanced. We'll be four and four, and then we can take on the rest of the league.
Okay, Coach.
Just call me Russell.
Tracy Terrell looks at traffic for us. All right, here we go. Teeny Tiny is ready to go. She's sitting right over there, and she's got that letter today. Oh, it's in her hand. Look at Jacob. Let's touch the paper now. Okay, Sean, here we go. It's a Monday, and again, remember, it's all about pacing yourself. We're going to try to get all the way to Friday and play the entire song. So if anybody's new to the show, Sean has a problem with this song, which we've been playing for years, and he's finally come forward. Here we go.
Sean, here we go.
I know. All right, that's a good start.
Good. I feel good.
Yeah, you should feel good about yourself.
John, that's too much.
That's too much. Teeny, right over there. You're all right. Sit up. Get that brown bag and blow into it. All right, here we go. We'll get to letter of the day first. Take care of all the rest. Here we go.
Okay, we start off with vaccine requirements. Today was D-Day. Sorts, area code 425. I vote we have a class action suit of all people that have received their vaccine only because they were threatened. I got my vaccination way before the mandate, only because I knew there was going to be a mandate, which I believe is morally and ethically wrong.
206. How many quit before this? They could impact the percentage as well. Jason Rance has a story that the numbers are not correct. Just to let you know.
Here, code 425. Wait. Police who live to tell what to do don't like be the told what to do. I think there's some.
It's funny. When I read it, I saw every word that needed to be there. But when you're right. No. Police that live to tell people what to do now don't like to be told what to do.
Yeah, it's all there. It's all there.
Gee whiz. How am I getting it right? 615, why is Big Pharma granted immunity from prosecution, but the powers that be want firearm manufacturers to be able to be sued over misuse of their product? People can't sue beer manufacturers, the DUI-related events. Wow, covering it all there.
And area code 425, John. Yes. I don't understand why you think vaccine mandates are a new thing. I've been a nurse for 32 years. I was mandated to get the hepatitis B series when I became a nurse. I also had to get checked for measles, rubella, chickenpox, had to get annual TB tests and an annual flu shot. Never protested.
Okay. Othello, Liz in Gig Harbor, such sensitive students should stay home. Are they prepared for anything?
Area code 360. The professor should have used Bugs Bunny's Barber of Seville instead. That would have met the students' academic expectations.
UW football. 206. How does anyone go to UW for 7 years and end up on the radio?
I can't tell. Does that mean that I...
No.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? That is it bad to be on the radio, or is it 7 years and you're on the radio? Because I was going to say, I'm just lucky, I guess.
That's good.
I love this job. Okay, the car salesman, Michael in the 206. I'd buy a car from John. How much for your Porsche?
Oh, I just spent $6,000 fixing it. John's truck, 206. What was John describing starting his truck? Buttigieg yelling at Biden about how much to start the economy? What?
Was that Curley describing starting his truck or Buttigieg yelling at Biden about how to start the economy?
Thank you very much, Jake. I appreciate that one.
Area code 253. Jewish or Irish goodbye?
Yes.
I regularly do both, depending on who, what, and where. Keep them guessing.
That's good. Let's see. Let's go to WSU football coach quitting 206 or being fired. Sorry. Why are the elected lawmakers in Olympia exempt from state employee vaccination mandate?
I didn't know they were.
I didn't know.
Hugh and Raymond. Hey, do you think Jay would have put me to death if I started a "Let's go Inslee" chant at a Cougar game?
Showerhead. 206, isn't Tom still in the house? It was built in 35 to 40 years ago, way before the restrictions were installed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read that as 3,540 years ago. Because my house is way older than 35 to 40 years old, if that's what you're wondering. Area code 206, look, fellas, the price of gas is not that important to me. But the price of bacon, now that's a different story.
Come on. Proof of vaccination. Ray in Ritzville says, yeah, I went to dinner the other day, and they asked to see my proof of vaccination. I told the kid, I'll do you one better. I'll show you my gallbladder surgery scar. So I hiked up my shirt, and I showed him. Is that one better? I would lose my appetite at that, Russ. I don't know. Is that the one better on that one? I don't know.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Comes from an old standby, Andy on the road less traveled.
Oh, boy.
Hi-ho, fellas, and happy friggin' Monday to you.
Yep.
Fellas, we are all languishing in the miasma known as 2-4, our records. And I, for one, am nonplussed, as young Mac seems to be progressing nicely, and there's nowhere to go but up. This is the New England Patriots quarterback.
Yes.
But I expect you fans of the world's shortest dynasty are plussed aplenty. So here's a puzzler to distract. What's the difference between a Fenway Frank and a Mariner's dog?
Oh,
you can still get a Fenway Frank in October.
Oh, boy.
Too soon. I'm never sure. That's it, fellas. Have a great rest of the week. And for the ALCS Go Bo Sox, you too, Pat.
Sounds like crazy stuff to me.
It is.
That's our Andy.
That's right.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
All right. Let's see if we can remember everything we said from 3 to 4.
Not a chance.
I started. Hey, Tom. I think started that way. Here we go.